Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. In the spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
You're listening to Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, Singapore's economy shrank by 12.6% year-on-year in the second quarter, and according to advanced estimates from the Ministry of Trade and Industry, as the circuit breaker measures to stem the COVID-19 pandemic took their toll. The decline in gross domestic product is worse than the 10.5% drop economists had anticipated in a Bloomberg survey. And we're joined on the line today by Michelle Jamrisco, Senior Asia Economy Reporter at Bloomberg. And she's been speaking to market watchers to find out if the only way is up from here. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here, Rachel.
So, Michelle, let's start with the latest GDP numbers. Now, MTI said that GDP declined 41.2% on the previous 3 months, entering a technical recession for the first time since 2009. Now, this is the biggest quarterly contraction on record and above the 35.9% expected by a Bloomberg survey. Are things expected to pick up from here?
Well, yes, so a little worse than expected and very ugly numbers. So we knew this was going to be very bad. I mean, key to remember, Singapore only started reopening in earnest in the third month of that second quarter in June. Mm. So that was a huge decline in economic activity that we were dealing with. And even the gradual reopening underway should at least help stop the bleeding in some of those hardest hit industries. We've already seen food and beverage and other retail starting to find a little bit of their footing. So we're not expecting to see anywhere near that hit economy in the third quarter, but we are expecting, you know, hurdles to remain. We can expect to see more retrenchments possibly in the second half of the year. Even the government officials have talked about that. And even as the stimulus has been rolled out, businesses are still trying to sort out their longer term plans in terms of their staffing. But there are other minor positive factors through year end to look at as well. I mean, government has been working to ensure that more of this massive stimulus is filtered through to the right places. We're going to see more wage subsidies coming through, and maybe some of that rental relief that wasn't exactly getting the right place is being pushed through. And it's very slow, but there are other signs of gaining traction, at least on the travel channels as well. You know, an agreement with some Chinese cities is in place, and we'll have that Singapore-Malaysia agreement in place next month in August. So no guarantee, but yes, the broad consensus is that we're going to see those very ugly numbers kind of fade a little bit, and we'll start to be on a better path of recovery soon.
Do you think we're likely to see any movement on the monetary policy front in October?
Yeah, I mean, October seems like ages away, especially in COVID time where things can move so quickly. And so I'd hate to hazard a guess at what they might do in that month. I think even MAS officials would be hard-pressed to guess now what they'll do then. But what we do know so far is that MAS has admittedly taken kind of a light touch in terms of allowing the fiscal stimulus to take the lead in this crisis and really do the heavy lifting and get that giant those giant stimulus packages to work, as we mentioned. But MAS did have the first of their twice-yearly meetings a little bit earlier than usual at the end of March instead of in April. And at that point, they did find it necessary to take an unprecedented easing move in terms of the mechanics of adjusting the currency band. So prior to that, they had also made an unscheduled statement to signal that there was room for the currency to ease, which then allowed the Singapore dollar to decline and give some early relief to the economy. And that was an action taken out of cycle. So these are things that they've been able to do to kind of, you know, help relieve some of that pressure. And we would expect maybe if things turn out worse than expected that they could take some of these measures again. But again, a lot of time between now and in October, and I'm sure they would be happy to be in a place to leave policy where it is.
And the government has said that the recovery will be slow. And in an interview with Bloomberg, Minister for Trade and Industry Chan Chun Sing said the greatest uncertainty with external demand. Now, he added that Singapore is, however, taking steps to position for the recovery. Can you just share with us some of those steps that he shared with Bloomberg during that interview?
Well, that's right. And we hear it a lot from officials that, you know, of course, the city-state is a very trade-reliant economy. And so that it does depend a lot on those external factors going right. But yes, the Minister Chen Shenzhen himself, as well as others, have for months been reciting the tagline, emerge stronger. We've heard that a lot. And much of the strategy domestically has been to emphasize how businesses should not just focus on crisis mitigation, but how to use this time to invest in forward-thinking initiatives and industries of the future and just building for the years to come. So the government has been talking a lot about the big push to digitize. And this is even an acceleration from things it's been doing for a while. So, of course, we know Singapore has been dealing with a rapidly aging population for some time and trying especially to accommodate older residents with things like digital banking. And those sorts of efforts are now in overdrive. I mean, it's not just working from home that has driven the digital economy, but, you know, there's a message from the government and from businesses on down that they want to invest more in these sort of automation techniques and other digital technologies. And on the side, you know, aside from the stimulus packages, the government also has announced they're committing more than 20 billion Singapore dollars to support research in sort of high impact areas. That's including health and biomedical sciences, climate change, AI, you know, just a range of next gen industries. So Minister Chan also mentioned that certain industries are going to need to make some sweeping changes out of this crisis. You know, some of the old hat industries that are always there, aviation, tourism, conference and exhibition, these have been hit hard and they need to kind of figure out what they need to do structurally to kind of reposition out of the crisis. So overall, we do hear a little bit of positive sentiment that Singapore can remain that sort of safe harbor, steady rule of law, favorable regulation, node of talent. But the message is for businesses to kind of try to take advantage of these things and come out of the crisis again, emerging stronger.
And do you think there's a need for another stimulus package? You know, as you mentioned, we've seen a record number of budgets this year, and businesses are looking at how they can survive once those measures have kind of faded. Do you think we could see more stimulus on the cards?
Yeah, I wouldn't expect it right now. I think the message from the government right now is that there is no need for another one immediately. Around the world, too, we've seen a lot of governments kind of taking a pause and looking at how the stimulus is filtered through. Of course, there's a lot of delay in terms of it getting to the right places and measuring the impact. So we'll have to see, for Singapore's case as well, how those four packages, some 93 billion Singapore dollars and nearly 20% of GDP, how that kind of makes its way to the right places of the economy. And, you know, whether more is needed and in what places those are needed. But, you know, as I mentioned, the wage subsidies are one portion of that stimulus that is yet to kind of filter through in more phases through year end. So hopefully those sorts of cushions that have already been passed and pledged will help kind of turn things around for the rest of the year.
We're speaking to Michelle Domrisco, Senior Asia Economy Reporter at Bloomberg. Now, Michelle, another area that Minister Chan touched on during the interview was capital flows out of Hong Kong. Are we likely to see those flows from Hong Kong into Singapore?
Well, what Minister Chan told us is what we've heard from other officials as well throughout this crisis is that they probably will see some capital flows and people flows perhaps out of Hong Kong in the wake of especially the national security law and ongoing U.S.-China tensions. So this, of course, is even after Hong Kong protests last year. But on this, you know, Singapore's officials have been careful to note that while, you know, the city-state might see some of these inflows, so far the numbers have been small, and they see the overall impact of the negative developments in Hong Kong as negative for Singapore, too, and for the rest of the region. So we also asked this question of MAS Managing Director Ravi Menon last week, and he said it's really the most popular question right now, but he noted that there have been more inquiries about moving businesses and funds, but the actual flows haven't yet presented themselves in the amount that some people are getting excited about. So he also said that financial services in the region isn't a zero-sum game. So again, he was underlying, you know, they're watching Hong Kong with concern, and they look forward to things stabilizing there for the good of the whole region.
Okay, now back to the recovery, and crisis often causes a catalyst for change. And in your article titled Singapore in Survival Mode looks to reinvent itself, you discussed this with a number of experts. How have things shifted in comparison to the past, and which direction is the country looking to reroute itself?
Yeah, this was a fun opportunity to kind of step back and think about where this crisis fits or doesn't fit in Singapore's history of crisis mitigation. And there have essentially been four other crisis periods in Singapore's history since independence. We had in the mid-1980s, we had the Asian financial crisis in the late 1990s, we had SARS in 2003, which many are remembering this year, and of course the global financial crisis now a little more than a decade ago. And each of these, of course, was unique in its magnitude and its duration and the impact on certain industries. But there was a similar attitude every time from the government in each, a sort of survivor mentality, as one economist put it, but not a need for a massive transformation, not just a tinkering on the edges to make it through the crisis. So we've heard this a lot this year, and this has been consistent throughout Singapore's history. So, for instance, after the SARS outbreak, Singapore ditched its long-held ban on gambling and built up the casinos in order to attract more tourism arrivals, to double those visitors. And after the global financial crisis, billions of dollars were poured into research and development with an emphasis on, again, forward-thinking industries like green energy. So we've already started to see what this big transformation might look like out of COVID. And there's this, of course, as we mentioned, the giant digital piece that we discussed earlier. But it certainly affected everyone, MNCs, small businesses, hawker centers, households, everyone. And the government has also organized business working groups to ensure that Singapore can get ahead on things like e-commerce, robotics, and supply chain digitization. And then elsewhere in industry, biopharmaceuticals, artificial intelligence are also in the mix. But I'd also add just one more, and that's key this year, and that is trade. Singapore is one of the 15 economies still trying to close the deal, hopefully this year, on the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, some people know as RCEP, which would be the biggest free trade pact in the world. And aside from trade negotiations with other countries, Singapore is also looking to diversify its food sources, buying prawns from Saudi Arabia, oranges from Egypt. You know, we hear eggs from Poland. So, you know, all these things are kind of contributing to a sort of sea change on these key fronts in trade. But it remains to be seen which one of these transformations will be the one we look back on as the signature out of this crisis. But
yeah.
it's an aggressive strategy.
Michelle, I want to ask you, you know, what do you then think would be the casino for COVID?
Well, I mean, I think it's all digital, digital, digital right now. So something out of the digitization will be the key. And I think it's exciting, and it has been exciting even before COVID, what's happening on the e-payments front throughout the region. I think Singapore has a lead on a lot of that. So we'll see if one of those digitization initiatives kind of takes the forefront. But I think something in the digital realm will certainly emerge the strongest.
Okay. So, Michelle, I'm sure you've got a busy week ahead of you. So tell us, what are you looking out for in the week ahead? What are you working on this week?
Yeah, it's always hard to tell. I mean, in these times, we've learned to kind of not plan too much day to day because so much can come unexpected. But one area that I would just focus on this week is, you know, government transition theme. Of course, we came out of Singapore's elections. We're still waiting to hear what the PAP might do in terms of perhaps shifting ministers around, perhaps shifting portfolio positions or tweaking around the edges on policy. So we'll see what that might have changed in terms of their mindset going forward. And then across the region in Thailand, they're dealing with a finance minister and a central bank governor that are going to be on their way out. So we'll be watching to see, what the next move is in terms of who might take their place and what that does to the policy strategy going forward.
Well, Michelle, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Sure.
I'm Rachel Kelly. You've been listening to In the Spotlight on Primetime on Money FM 89.3. And we've been speaking to Michelle Jemrinsko, Senior Asia Economy Reporter at Bloomberg.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.